My name is Karina Harney, Playboy's Playmate of the Year, 1992.
And I'm Echo Johnson, Miss January, 1993. Welcome to the Bunny Chronicles. Let's go. Okay.
So, we've never met Jim. Mm-mm,
mm-mm. Well, Jim, it is very nice to meet you. Yeah. I'm Karina.
Karina Harney.
Karina Harney.
And I'm Echo.
I have a beef stick in my pocket. I'm going to set that aside.
And we were just, we were just kind of going down memory lane about the Chicago offices versus West Coast, because Karina was shot by Fagley in Chicago, and then I was West Coast. But, all right, so we have, do you prefer Jame or Jim's?
Jame or Jim's?
James or Jim?
Most people called me Peterson. I did not until recently. My kids call me Dad. Everyone else calls me Peterson.
And
let's do that.
My memo pad at Playboy's always had from Peterson.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. No one thinks my first name is important.
Well, Karina wanted to ask how do you pronounce your name? She said Jime. I said no, Jim.
That's a joke.
It was a joke. Exactly.
It was a joke.
Okay. So this is, I'm so happy you're on here. We have had an incredible week of guests, and you are our last guest and one of the most profound we are definitely going to have on our interview. So James Peterson. Peterson, we'll call him, was 40 years at Playboy from 1973 to 2003, began as an assistant editor and then promoted to senior staff writer by Hef. And you started working in the Chicago offices. I'm going to just start the show with one of the quotes you gave me because it's amazing. And
he
also
has a book, The Century of Sex.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that. So one of the most amazing quotes from yourself was Playboy made sex a legitimate beat for journalism and journalists such as yourself. And I really loved that when you told me that.
I was in the catbird seat. I got to watch the sexual revolution happen.
Right.
And the other thing I always say to explain that decade is that the sexual revolution happened on the newsstand. Now, I don't imagine either of you even know what a newsstand looks like.
No, we
do.
Yeah,
I
do.
Where, was on
she's
a newsstand.
50, and I think I'm 48. I'm not sure.
I'm not 50 yet. My gosh, I have a whole year. Thank you.
Whatever, close. No, of course we remember the newsstands. And I would always run and get my newsstand specials because I was on so many covers. And I loved them. And that's a non-existent thing these days.
Yeah.
The beauty was Hefner's genius was that he gave us permission to cover what was happening to us. Arthur Kretschmer came in and hired a staff of young editors, and Playboy became the magazine in which we wrote about ourselves.
Right.
The artists that we liked. In the 50s, he said, Playboy was essentially a science fiction magazine with nudes. And by the time it reached its power in the early 70s, late 60s, he gave permission for writers to talk about their lives as it was happening to them in the language it was happening. We had articles on what it was like to live with someone mm-hmm. when the proper term for living with someone was living in sin,
right,
or
right.
fallen woman, and what kind of relationship happened when you just liked each other and didn't require rings or weddings or, and there was, I was the Playboy advisor, and when they hired me to give advice on fashion, food and drink, stereo, sports cars, dating dilemmas, taste, or etiquette. Most of the letters we got, and we got 1,000 letters a month, were about sex and relationships. People always ask what the top five letters were. Probably number one was, how do I increase the size of my penis?
Really?
And number two was my girlfriend doesn't reach orgasm without carnal knowledge with a Black and Decker sander. What am I doing wrong? But men wanted to give their partner pleasure, and there were no guidebooks to do that. The sex manuals at the time just said, oh, do foreplay.
And there's no defining what foreplay was.
Yeah. Without defining, the joke was, I took over the advisor in 1973.
Will you explain a little bit what the advisor is for the people that are watching that probably don't know?
Oh, are we watching or talking?
No, we're recording. But just so in the future, when it's put out, that people know what the advisor was. Yes.
Okay. Someone once came to Hefner and said, we should do a parody of Ann Landers, who was the original sob sister, a newspaper columnist who would answer problems from her readers.
That's right. Yeah.
And Hefner said, wait a second. I like Ann Landers. Let's not do a parody. Let's do an advice column. Let's start a conversation with our readers. And it was one of those things that opened up. Playboy was participatory media, was interactive media before the phrase existed. We had letters to the editor, we had letters to the foreman, we had letters to the advisor. Readers sent in party jokes. But they started, the people who wrote the Playboy Advisor column, 1,000 letters a month arrived.
And you had 12 people, staff members, that would respond to that, right?
Yes, we had a reader service department. Wow. And we would answer every one of those letters that had a self-contained stamped envelope.
Wow.
You have to think. Those people had no one else to turn to for advice. Mm-hmm. They couldn't ask their parents. They couldn't ask their minister. And most of what they were interested in would qualify them for psychoanalysis in the prevailing
climate
sense of the time. Yeah. Sex was a sin or it was psychotic. Wow. If you were doing anything other than sex in the missionary position within a marriage for procreation.
Right.
So people wrote to this advisor column, and I would read, reader service would answer them, and I would go through every letter trying to choose 10 letters that I hadn't seen before, and then I would research them and write the answers that went into the magazine. And people would say, you know, you're 25 years old, what qualifies you to give sex advice? And I said, I went to Boy Scout camp. The Boy Scout motto is be prepared. And so from the time I was 12, I had read everything I could about sex in case it ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I came to Playboy 2 years after Masters and Johnson published their groundbreaking research and the year that Alex Comfort wrote The Joy of Sex. So I had medical knowledge. Masters and Johnson were friends of the magazine. I became friends of theirs. And Alex Comfort wrote an unapologetic manual about the joy of sex. Mm-hmm. Simple. Mm-hmm. And even he was under constraints. In 1970, the book was something like 260 pages long. And there were three paragraphs devoted to oral sex. And he called it something like mouth music.
Mouth music.
There were 12 pages. There were 12 pages devoted to bondage. Three paragraphs to oral sex because you could write about bondage. That was classic English kink.
Right.
But you couldn't write about oral sex. And my predecessor at the advice column had tried to answer a letter. What is the caloric content of sperm? Someone wanted to be able to blow someone without blowing their diet.
Blow somebody without blowing their
That's
diet.
That's a book right
there. I
gotta
write that down. Blow somebody without blowing your diet. That's awesome.
That sounds like a nice little tabletop book there.
It It turned out that it was like 3 to 10 calories. It's mostly water and a few trace elements. You realize how hard it is to read the label on those tiny suckers?
Right.
But the company that had published Playboy for 2 decades refused to print that page.
No way.
They were afraid that they would go to jail.
Wow.
And I think I ran the letter at some point in 1973. I said, we can run this advice now. But that shows you we were the first magazine to talk about sex explicitly, not to arouse, although we tried to do that sometimes, but
it,
to
it,
just
it was fact real for it information. Was, yeah, facts, and obviously yeah. You gathered the information from the letters and the questions you
right.
would receive
right.
and you wanted to give people what they were asking
yeah.
for.
Which
was a beautiful service.
If someone had the courage to ask a question, I had the resources to try to answer it.
Now, awesome. You would go and investigate as right. well. Like, right. that's what you did. So you would go find out.
Like Plato's and tell me. Yeah, you had mentioned that. What was Plato's?
Okay. This is Arthur Kretschmer was the managing editorial executive, and he called me in his office one day and said, I want you to take a stroll along the sexual frontier.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Where's that?
Great line, but he was the first person to put those two words together.
Right.
And so I said, okay. And I would go to New York City, explore S&M clubs, public orgies. Plato's Retreat had been the continental baths where gays would meet to do what gays do, and where Bette Midler perfected her act, singing to gays. And then someone bought the lease and turned it into a heterosexual orgy club. Mm-hmm. And people would drive in from Long Island to show what they had learned in Long Island. Oh,
the tunnel people.
Yes, in front of other people. Mm-hmm. I went to a bar where it was, where the waitresses were bar snacks.
Whoa.
And it was $1 a touch, $1 a lick. And they would come down and sort of lower themselves in front of you and say, ever want to be a gynecologist?
Wow.
And offer to pull aside the mystery screen.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the most welcoming bars I have ever been. People made use of the dancers different ways. There was some guy playing pool and he would come back and sort of cue the woman and then go back and play pool and clear the table. There was someone who would come in, a tall sort of Viking, 6'6", and he would pick the woman up with one hand and quaff her like a yard of ale.
Wow.
And if you did something that allowed the dancer to perform, she would allow you to kiss the space between her breasts. This was, you know, a lovely.
I have to
and
ask
so,
you.
And revolutionary.
So Hugh Hefner sent you to these places for research, correct? And I wanted to ask you, backing up here, do you remember the first time that you met Hef and what that experience was and how you came to be a part of the Playboy family? I mean, how were you hired? How did you even find out? What's that story?
I worked at Psychology Today. It was my first job out of college. And
that makes sense.
Playboy just exploded through the roof at the beginning of the 70s, and they started poaching writers and editors from other magazines. And a writer at Psychology Today / Careers Today named Craig Vetter was hired by Playboy to be the first staff writer. And he was sent on an assignment. The magazine had heard that flights on Air Finlandia to Europe were airborne orgies. It was the cheapest ticket, and all the hippies would get on this airplane and fly there,
Your
have orgies
there.
In midair. So they sent Craig, And Craig got to Europe and said, no orgy, but I'm going to stay here for 2 or 3 weeks, if you don't mind. And I heard this story and I said, my God, this is a magazine that has money to explore an idea they've heard about and to take the writer's word that there was no article. They didn't require that to justify the plane ticket Craig had to write. There I was at 50,000 feet, surrounded by nubile young hippies with only a bottle of Kama Sutra oil.
Wow.
So I said, I want to write for that magazine. Mm-hmm. And I showed up the week the previous Playboy advisor became a millionaire. A guy named Frank Robinson looked out the window of the office and saw a fire on the 80th floor of the John Hancock building.
Whoa.
And he said, how do you fight fires in a high rise? I said, dear Playboy advisor, how do you fight fires in a high rise?
Wow.
He researched it, wrote up a treatment for a novel, sent it to his agent. The agent called back, said, Frank, I got you $25,000 for the hardbound, $450,000 for the paperback, and $450,000 for the movie rights. Wow. You better start writing this thing.
That's incredible.
And that became The Towering Inferno.
Wow. Oh my God.
Goosebumps even more. Wow.
And so I walked in and Arthur Kretschmann, the executive editor, said, can you give sex advice? And I said, yep. I lied.
Well,
I sure can,
and I will.
I figured I knew 10 things about sex for sure.
Right.
It turns out that I had read 9 of those 10 things in the Playboy Advisor.
Uh-huh.
And the 10th one was completely wrong, but a lot of fun to try. And so I sat down and started reading those letters, and it was probably that I was made for this job. I had been in training for this job all my life. So in those days, you would go over to the mansion on Sunday night to watch first run movies, watch Hefner play games.
And this is the mansion in Chicago?
The mansion in Chicago.
Nice.
It was that. Wow. That, mind you, this is before both of you were born.
Right, right.
You seem so young. It's mind blowing to me that. I'm listening, but looking at you and it.
Wow.
You would never know.
You never know. You're only old once, but you can be immature forever.
Oh,
so,
I love that. Yay. I'm going to write that down. That's a good question.
Yeah, but anyway, I met Hefner, and. At that time,
do you remember what it was like? Because what did you think about him? I mean, obviously, you realizing that's the place to be with the freedom to do the editorial work that you really longed for. Because there's we keep talking about the objectivity,
and
today you don't get the objectivity. You don't get just being able to explore something without a biased opinion. I just don't see good writing. It's persuasive writing. It's not, hey, this is an observation and this is information.
That's right. And then also to come back to the point that we keep talking about when we took the photographers and, you know, different people within the company, that anything done at the magazine, there was no limit. It's like of cost involved. And so you were able to go and do these things like you were talking about.
And it wasn't.
And it was honest. And it was authentic.
And it wasn't frivolous to Hef because he knew that this was something.
That was the way it had to be done.
It's the sexual revolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were exploring things. And it's healthy. I always believe in monogamy. That's my personal thing. But
and sex is healthy.
But it's very healthy. And there are things that enhance a marriage, things that you learn, and that is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to be able to please your wife or please your husband, and those things weren't being explored. So really, you're giving pleasure and beautiful relationships to people. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a whole other psychological. Yeah. But he was part of that, and where people didn't know where to go.
There were at that time 2 editors in America who embodied their publication, Jan Winner at Rolling Stone and Hugh Hefner at Playboy.
That makes sense, Rolling Stone.
Wow. And so the thing I noticed about Hef was it was my magazine myself. He started in the kitchen and put every dollar back into the magazine.
That's right.
He wanted to make the best magazine he could.
Yep.
And to be allowed onto that playing field was a privilege.
Absolutely.
And to go to work with equally talented people in so many different fields. Mm-hmm. I used to say, see you around campus. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like. It was that
learning with the best. There on the cutting edge, right there. And it's
and it, there,
changing
there was
the you, course
there
of
was
America.
Unity, and it was a family. And Hef knew where your strengths were going to be and the positions that he put everybody in, and then to cohesively work together and to achieve, you know,
but
that dynamic and that level of perfection is what occurred.
But the innovative, you know, scientists really, you look at not our time, before our time, sadly, I wish there were innovators in this way.
There's not.
And these,
it was a moment in time. And that's what's so incredible about
it. It was a moment in time. And just with regards to the man, I have probably three separate opinions of Hefner because he was three separate people.
That's interesting. Speak to
He worked his life so that he wanted to live the rest of his life on the kind of movie set you saw in the 1930s movies.
Right.
The Thin Man, Godfrey. He wanted to live in a Busby Berkeley musical. And both mansions look like the set of a Busby. So he would live on the set because he wanted to live the life he had dreamed of and wanted to be known for the way it looked. And it looked fantastic.
Yep.
And he would have one or two pictures showing him working on the round bed, or a playmate jumping into the underground pool, that this was his life.
Right.
Give him that.
Sure.
The other Hefner, he never showed you the work.
Yeah, right. Nobody knew.
Forget being on the round bed with a few pieces of paper. Yeah. It was nonstop.
It was a living, breathing 24-hour, 360
and
days a year.
It was a very high-quality work, and I'll get to that at the end. If he gave you an idea, it was usually worth pursuing.
Absolutely.
But to the degree of perfection, he would look at a cartoon, and it would be a vaudeville cartoon. There would be a line of dancers, and in front of it would be a vaudeville comedian telling it a joke. And you would get a note from Hefner saying, the left breast on the 13th dancer looks wrong.
Amazing. His detail.
And Lillian Mueller was a girlfriend who finally did a playmate. She's coyly standing behind a goldfish bowl. And it took the photographer something like 700 takes to get the picture that Hefner said, You've got Lillian, you've got her, but the goldfish in the goldfish bowl is looking the wrong way.
Right.
Oh my God.
The goldfish
but
are not in the right.
That, but yeah. That's what that made detail the magazine. Yep. Yes.
Now, nice. That the level of detail was breathtaking, and he would not settle for second best.
Nope.
Or good enough. He wanted perfect.
Yep.
And he, by and large, achieved that. Mm-hmm. Those magazines, sometimes if you raid your grandfather's garage and can find stacks of the magazines from the 70s, they are gorgeous on every page, not just the women, the artwork.
Everything. The fonts, the way the paper felt. I mean, everything was so
the
meticulous.
First interactive and media. Yes. All of it. And then
it was brilliant.
It was even the way he balanced. It was all balanced and symmetry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, in the girls that he chose. I mean, in the articles that he made sure he knew who was going to go where.
He knew.
He had so much in there to think about. You think about these writers you think about all of the editorial end of it, and then the artistic end of
exactly.
it, and then the
and he had his finger on the pulse of every single finite detail of the magazine, and that's what we're speaking to. Yeah. That people don't necessarily
have
know.
Any clue.
They think, oh, just oh, Hugh Hefner, the gigolo with like many yeah. girlfriends. It's like, oh God, you have no idea
and then
who this
launched
man was.
Careers. What? Where would you be without Playboy?
Right.
What would your life been had been as full? Would you? I mean, what are your thoughts there? Do you ever think that really was, you know, set the course of mm-hmm. a true career? Do you think that way? Do you?
I feel like I'm one of the luckiest people in the world.
Same.
I knew Same. When to say yes, mm-hmm. and then it just opened into what happens next. I was given an audience of like 25 million people. And I thought that the only person with a better job in America was Steven Spielberg. And I'm sorry,
Fair.
I'll settle for being the Playboy advisor yeah. for 20 or 30 or 40, you know, yeah. of being the person responsible for talking about sex for that long. And I said it became a legitimate beat. You had the women's movement, women's rights. Right. You had right. pornography right. evolving into what's available on the internet. You had diseases. First, it was herpes. Newsweek would put scarlet letter.
Oh my
you know,
gosh.
That the way the regular press dealt with any topic sexual was it was either a scandal or it could kill you.
Right.
And Hefner said, demythologize. Get to the story.
Get to the
and
trip.
So we would talk honestly about herpes, which was just a trial run for AIDS.
Yep.
And when AIDS came out, most of the mass media just fed the panic, created homophobia, and people like Pat Robertson would say, it's God's revenge on homosexuals. Oh, thanks. And we just said, no, this is what we know about it. It happened. It can, when Magic Johnson said that he
was HIV
had acquired the virus, the article that Playboy published saying, this is what we learned from this. This is what we know was unmatched anywhere on the newsstand. I think that's the best thing I ever wrote. Never mind the strolls along the sexual frontier. When it came down to a medical health issue, we were able to talk about it in the language you could listen.
And talking to the experts and really getting the facts right. and the truth.
You know, President Reagan didn't mention AIDS for like 4 years. How many deaths are traceable to that? And so we weren't afraid to wade in. That would be the best way to say it. And we waded in on race. We waded in on the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
We waded in on
and everything that was going on that was controversial at that time.
It makes you wonder. I can't help but wonder. I always think what would have been written. What would have been the story on the pandemic and the issue?
And just what our current culture right now. I mean, I think Hef would just be so disheartened and appalled.
Print has pretty much disappeared. I will read The Atlantic, The New Yorker, sometimes Wired, and the Smithsonian. I get my breaking news from the History Channel.
I love that. You know, so,
But almost no one has the room to do something in depth. The interview right. was unmatched anywhere in any media.
And it was always supposed to. I mean, he
without
would get. He would go straight to, and it was, I mean, it wasn't would spend right or left. It
days
was whatever.
On these interviews, yes. right? I mean, hours
and hear it
on
from the
end
horse's from, mouth. Yeah. And it was very in depth and candid. And people
candid, yeah.
trusted mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it trusted these, the Playboy writers.
The print, the publication.
Yes. And yeah, it was more relaxed, you know, it wasn't. I'm worrying about what I'm going to say.
Exactly. I'm going to get canceled because I say this bullshit, yes. You know?
Well, you would get the whole person.
Oh, yeah.
And that you don't get on any media today.
No, they paint whatever they want.
The writer would spend weeks sometimes until he became part of the family. And that's when you get to the, you know, the Jimmy Carter saying, "I lust in your heart." That was into a response at the end of several days. And Barry Golson was walking out the door and he turns around and says, "What about, you know, all people think you're a fundamental Baptist. How do you deal with sex?" And he just says, "I lust in my heart." And that one remark humanized him enough that he won the election. People weren't afraid of the Southern Baptist. That kind of incidental influence. Someone has asked me, what was it like? Someone wanted to do a screenplay or a docudrama like Mad Men about Playboy. And I said, go with the personalities. Because the actual place we worked at was see around campus. You'd gather over the coffee table and talk. And the number of ideas that came out of those conversations filled the magazine. The magazine was the magazine of record of our hallway conversations.
Oh, that is fascinating.
Wow.
That makes sense.
And I was taking this somewhere. So we had a guy named Alex Haley who would do interviews, and Hefner would send him to interview George Lincoln Rockwell or Miles Davis, and Alex was just another one of the guys, a very good interviewer. And Murray Fisher worked there. He edited the interviewers. And then he started working with Alex, trying to put Alex's life story into shape. And well, okay, we ran two chapters of that book in the magazine. It was called, and then a year later, you saw it on television as Roots.
Wow.
And the television show changed America. Mm-hmm. But it was just daily business.
Right. It was the norm. It was the daily norm.
It was the norm. Yep. And that's an interesting article, Alex. I didn't know this about you. Okay, see you around. And then it would go out and just literally change the world.
Exactly.
Yes, it did.
What was the third thing that you were going to say that you said Hef, there was three, you know, personalities or three versions of Hef? What was the third one?
At some point, 1973, he said, "I want to do a book, The History of the Sexual Revolution." Mm-hmm. But not the one that started with me. Go back 100 years and tell the story.
He loved history.
I love that.
I said, I demand the right to do this. I want to see how we got this way.
Yeah.
And so that was a 3-year project. It started with him sending me a 60-page single-spaced memo. Wow. About what he thought it should be. And then he asked me for the table of contents. And I said, 1910, 1920, 1930. I said, I don't know what I'm going to discover. Leave me alone. I'll go discover it. And he edited. He was the first reader on every word I wrote. And he was a very harsh taskmaster. Mm-hmm. And I would get memos from him. There was a period where I thought if I met him, I would kill him.
Oh,
because the amount,
difficult. Yeah.
The amount of obsessive abuse he was dumping on me. And then I realized, oh, wait, this is the voice in his head. This is how he talks to himself.
Right.
This is why he noticed the 13th breast on the dancer was wrong, was looking.
The consummate perfectionist.
It was his his greatest weakness and greatest strength. He suffered
his weakness,
with that,
absolutely,
that people
but
don't realize
because
you can't. Yeah. That's a lot.
It made his day-to-day.
But look how good it made everyone. It took them to the next level because he demanded perfection, which is impossible. But he wanted you to do the impossible, which was
done. And it was achieved.
But as an editor, I wrote something in the 1905. There was a physician named Prince Morrow. And Prince Morrow was the first person talking about venereal disease in America. And he said, half of all wives have venereal disease. Half was reading this and looked up and said, whoever said this had an agenda.
Yep. Wow.
And I said, well, actually, this guy went on to found the American Social Health Association, started treating this on a course of things that ended up years later with Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. He started public awareness that it was just a matter of health. It wasn't mm-hmm. a sin. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you weren't a fallen woman. This happened between married couples where nothing was supposed to happen other than procreation. But he said, this guy had an agenda. And
he was so intelligent and could read things. Mm-hmm. He was a
and he could time travel
critic.
That was the joy of that book. Was he said, "I want to know. I want you to look at all. I want you to read what was readable. I want you to watch what was watchable, and listen to what was listenable." Because he thought sex happened in music. Sex certainly was inspired by movies, and what was allowed to be written was the history of censorship in America. And so I became well-read. I have a box of videotapes and movies. I did time travel through the century, and it was, there's no second act to that.
No, that's quite a ride. Yeah,
that is fascinating.
Time
what a journey.
Is quite a ride, and wow. with a man that decades,
with him leading and inspiring and leading and guiding. That's amazing.
And when we finally met for the launch party for the book, I still didn't know if I was going to kill him or thank him. And he walked up to me and said, thank you. You saved my life.
Wonderful.
And we had respect for each other. If he was concerned about a topic, he would call me up and say, what do I think about this? Mm-hmm. Tell me what I think about
this. I love
that. All right, write it. I'll sign it.
He knew so the experts. He trusted. Mm-hmm. What a gift that he had that trust in you.
An honor, yeah, absolutely.
If you could say anything to him as if you were at his memorial or in memoriam.
Or before he passed, or you knew you were going to see him one last time.
Yes, and you knew you were going to be able to say something to him. What would you say, Jim?
I would say thank you for the wild ride, for the
excellent,
for the stage, for the support. He created that universe. And I've had this conversation with Arthur. It was like being on a championship team. And
it absolutely was. And every single one of us that we, you know, the Playmates, but every single person that we have interviewed that has come on the show has been as simplistic as that, as just
thank you for giving me the ride of my life.
Thank you. It'll never happen again. It was a moment in time that we were so.
I always get goosebumps. I sit here with goosebumps.
We were so fortunate to be a part of, and it's just, wow.
Does anyone ask you what it was like?
No, nobody has.
The magazine?
Nobody has. Yeah.
Okay, tell me, because the first 20 years, I got to interview Playmates and write the stories that went along with them. Mm-hmm. And it's what was expected of junior editors. Also, I was one of the single editors. So I have heard all of the different ways Playmates came to the magazine. Mm-hmm. And everyone is different. Mm-hmm. And the experience tended to be an opening finally someone saw them as beautiful. Yes. To be photographed by a Pompeo bazaar is just...
It doesn't happen.
That would have been a dream. That would have been,
hashtag, you're welcome.
Richard Fagley. Yeah. I that's who I got, and I have an affinity, obviously, forever. And I'm so sad that he's...
Fagley was brilliant. All of these guys were patient. And
there's only a handful. I mean, all of you. And this is another testimony to Hugh Hefner. Mm-hmm. A small handful. It was very exclusive.
And stayed there for, you guys stayed there for decades
Peterson,
and decades. And you don't see that. That doesn't happen.
No, the loyalty and the same, yes, with these photographers, a handful. And they are all brilliant. But he saw that and let them explore what their – he saw people's strengths and would let them explore that.
But I do want to talk about that, about like our experience. And I appreciate you asking that because nobody has. And I'll go ahead and
that we'll
and
do at the Playmate Roundtable.
Yeah, we're
going
to do it at a Playmate Roundtable. But I can say for me, it was something that fell into my lap. I wasn't looking to do it. I didn't know what Playboy was. I was discovered by Greg Gorman, and Greg Gorman tested me and shot me for German Playboy. Hef saw that and then booked me to be January 1993. I was 18 years old, 2 months out of high school. I was very young. I was very naive. I wanted to model. I knew that, and I had modeled since I was 13 years old. Didn't think that this would be the way to do so. And absolutely fell in love with photography, with all things makeup, skin. I'm a licensed California esthetician. I had a skincare studio for 8 years in Newport Beach. That came from. I taught myself how to build websites. I was the second Playmate to figure out the internet was coming. I created and built websites. I have this incredible background in marketing.
All stemming from Playboy. That opportunity.
But with that said, and then obviously the travel and then the relationships, the family that we acquired from
Echo and I met at a Playmate of the Year party.
And immediately best friend. And Hef just was the most gracious, kindest. He was a protector. He was a mentor. He was our boss. And he was like a father to us, and he loved every single one of us. He knew every single one of our names, and he was so gracious and welcoming and open and always, yes, you can stay at the mansion. Like, I never lived in LA. I always lived in Austin, and I was always out in LA working, and I would always call Norma. Will you ask Hef if I can stay at the mansion? Cause I'll be working. She said, sure. And she'll call me back. Yep. Hef said, no problem. But I didn't really understand the levity and the gravity of what I was involved in at 18 years old. I certainly didn't even get it until maybe in my 30s. And right at 30, I got very, very burnt out with the whole thing with modeling, because I had gone on and created a website that I did for 7 years where I was then producing all of my own content. And with that said, now today, I own 36,640 images of beautiful photos that I created, that I produced by setting up, you know, hiring the makeup artists and the photographers and locations.
But understanding how to do that.
Yeah,
production,
exactly.
For me, production,
right?
For me.
And I got burnt out, and I put all of my stuff away. I have 9 covers I'm on. I put all of those away, and I needed to kind of decompress from it. And I had a baby, and just kind of, you know, let go of that for a while, and, you know, was grateful for it. And then in my late 30s, am I 47 or 48? I think I'm 47. it was just a couple of years ago. And I just really started having a much better understanding of the history and the exclusivity
you
of
and I
what
both at
we
the same
were
time.
A part of. And I got it. And I was like, I'm going to do something with this. This is all going to come full circle. And now here it is. And I'm writing. I have published stories online. We're creating this podcast, and it all goes back to Hef. But with that said, I definitely was too young. And I think Karina can speak to this as well. She was 18. They didn't warn you about what was about to happen to your life.
No.
You had no.
I had my
hold
first
on
anxiety attack
fucking tight.
Before my issue came out.
And I got I got so overworked. I hated signing autographs, you know, that first year you're working all the time. That BJ Turner said, "You're not working anymore because your attitude sucks and you don't even know what you're a part of." And I didn't work for 2 years. And then I realized, "Oh, okay. I want to be a part of this." And I started writing letters to all the big people and made sure I went and saw every single person face to face in Chicago offices and in LA offices. And then I started working with the top of the top, with Tony Lin and all of international promotions. And, you know, it was a really incredible experience. I don't say I can't say that I would want my daughter to do that at that age. I have no problem with it, but 18 was definitely too young.
I have no regrets, and I told you mine.
I don't have regrets. I just wish that they had. I just wish that they had better. Like, I told Playmate Promotions this. I said, you know, you should have older playmates come in and speak to, especially these young girls that are
Wendy
coming
and
in.
I went
and
through
give
a PR
them an
course.
Idea of what is about to
we
happen to their lives because we have no idea, and that's the only thing that I would say. But my God, it happened. And thank you, Greg Gorman. Thank you, Hef. And thank you for this journey. And I applaud Hef. And I love him. And I'm so grateful for him. Aww. And I'm so grateful to have these conversations with you. And the interviews we've had this week have just been mind-blowing. And Crane and I just keep learning so much more.
And that's the thing. It's the history for me.
It's amazing.
Well, I'll just tell you, Peterson, now that we know you're Peterson. We were having bourbon by the fire. I mean, and
3 years
these,
ago.
3 years ago.
After some tragic GlamourCon.
We don't go and sign on. I don't. Yeah. I hadn't signed autographs in I don't know how many years. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go do this. I'd love to see some of the girls. I went to this autograph signing, and then Echo stayed with me. And we
Vegas.
Sat by the fire. And I had an idea about a documentary that I wanted to do because we wanted to give a proper send-off and farewell to Hef.
Well, because we're also furious about the books that came out from Holly and his other girlfriends that were absolutely atrocious and were not correct to who he was as a human being and as a man. That was not our truth.
Yes, yes.
It was their truth. And we wanted to—
I never felt threatened ever once.
Never, ever.
He was a gentleman. I felt the safest I ever did. But I was a kid, Peterson, and for me, I wouldn't even get naked in front of my friends. I always put my t-shirt. I was very modest, and I had I mean, I'm not going to go into mine like Echo did. But long story short, I mean, Hef gave me a chance.
You are who you are today because of it.
Yes, and I ended up testing, and I thought my boyfriend was crazy. He found an ad in the paper, and I'm like, Playboy or Playmate.
Yeah.
I called my mom. I said, you know, my boyfriend wants me to do Playboy. Can you believe it? And I thought it was horrible.
She goes, yeah.
Not knowing that my grandpa was a collector and, you know, they were all excited. They all came to my Playmate of the Year party. But long story short, it was so many details that came together that was not only meant to be, but I was prepared for. Mm-hmm. God's humor, really. And here we are. But for me, the fascinating thing is the freedom of it and getting to experience things I never would have and meeting mm-mm, fascinating mm-mm. people such as yourself and understanding this living, breathing brand and how many incredibly
no longer
colorful human beings mm-hmm, mm-hmm. are a part of it. Mm-hmm. And then hearing your story.
It's fascinating. It's
yeah. Good stuff.
We are learning just so much, Jem. And it's
and we're gonna have a party.
Oh,
by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, we're gonna do a party that's going to be a memorial service.
A huge celebration of life.
What should have been done for the man that launched all of our careers, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. really made an impact in our lives.
And we didn't get to say goodbye.
And we didn't get to say goodbye. And we would love to do a party in honor of him. So mm-hmm. we're putting that together.
For all the staff,
the way he would have
friends,
had a party
exactly.
for us, the
exactly.
way he did have a party
exactly.
for us.
As if you're walking into a party at the mansion.
And we get to say goodbye. And mm-hmm. we would love to have you there,
yep.
Peterson. So we're gonna do this. So
yeah. And
just, what do you think?
Yeah. Dedication to have.
What do you think, Peterson? What do you think?
Tell us.
The night Hefner died, I was having dinner with Arthur Kretschmer, and it was also the night my first grandchild was born.
Oh, wow.
And so Arthur and I drive Arthur to these dinners out that we still have. We sat and talked about the Hefner we knew.
Yeah.
Which I've alluded to, the man who did the work mm-hmm. and who trusted. Mm-hmm. Then I just in passing, I said, you know, my grandson will grow up into a world that has forgotten Hef. By the time my grandson is old enough to be interested in the things that Hef was interested in, he will have faded. And it bothered me that the coverage of his death was hashtag we'll miss the
it
mansion
was terrible.
Party.
It was awful. It was awful. Know.
That's what we're doing. We're not.
It was not. It was not.
We're not letting it happen, uh-uh. Peterson. We're not going to let it happen.
No, it is. I've had drinks with the people around campus who are working there. And it's always a very solemn, sad, and strengthening dinner to just share the stories. Mm-hmm. I had worked there, 40 years, and I'd never heard the goldfish was looking in the wrong direction.
See, all of us.
We learn from, we're all learning from each other.
And never gets old. It's beautiful.
There's so many little golden nuggets of history that we're pulling out from everybody. And we are so grateful. And I tell you, Hef is with us. Pat Lacey has been with us this whole time doing our recordings. And she said, Hef is here right now with you girls. And he is so happy and he is so grateful.
He did not get the proper send off.
And we are not going to allow that to happen. So that's what we're doing.
And we're grateful that you're a part of it.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you guys luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think it's
important. Three words.
You know,
three words.
Wait, 1 second.
Okay.
Because I think it's important, like you said, that when your grandson was born, and that's what you thought, that, wow, my grandson's going to grow up in a world that, you know, it's a faded memory. And that shouldn't be.
Or dirtied.
That should never be.
It's been dirtied because of the movements and the cancel culture and the hashtag Me Too and the overboard babies.
So
tired of it.
Yeah.
Tired of the First Amendment rights.
Yep. Amen.
First
to that.
Amendment rights. I love that Hef was such a big advocate of that.
And that the HMH Foundation is solely for that. So.
So three words. Just three words that you would describe Hugh M. Hefner.
Get it right.
Yes! Oh my gosh! Awesome.
That's the best. Thank
Get
you.
It right.
Nobody said that one yet. I love that. Get it right.
But he just did it in one shot.
Excellent. All right, my dear. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really enjoyed this conversation. Peterson.
Here we are. You know, thank you. An honor.
And if we have any other questions or anything, we can give you a call, right, and talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
And anyone else you think that might want to come on and tell their story,
well,
like
Bruce,
you said,
Bruce Luger is
and
gonna
it's comforting
come on
to
and
everyone.
There's a lot of people that are coming on still.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's so many people beyond the 10th floor that became 680.
Exactly. We know that.
But, this is completely. It's the one story I think I mentioned in our pre-interview that when I was doing the book, I asked Hef, well, what do you think you did? How did you change America? And he said, I invented living together.
I love that. I invented living together.
And I went and did the numbers. In 1970, the census said that there were something like 75,000 Americans living together.
These are things that no one would think about.
Living in sin, fallen women, despicable men, 75,000. By 1980, there were over a million. And I don't even know the number today. He made it acceptable. He made it attractive. He had Barbie Benton and Lillian Muller and the love of his life, sharing space in a mansion, but without wedlocks, without posting bands, mm-hmm. and said, this is what it looks like to do it. And my generation said, good idea. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. And that
they
was,
got on board.
And they got on board. And that's just, and that was what he knew he personally had done.
Yeah. But he never spoke.
He was not a man to take credit or say, I did this.
And we're finding out more and more just private little philanthropy.
Yeah.
I
mean, we found some really interesting stuff out about the zoo and his contribution to rare exotic animals. So I want to end it with people to know that you wrote the book called The Century of Sex, which was all about the Playboy history of the sexual revolution. And it took you 3 years to write that book, and it was a complete labor of love.
And it was edited by Hugh M. Hefner.
Right, exactly. Wow. So people, go get that book.
Yes.
It'll be eye-opening.
Is it on Amazon, or where can they order your book?
You might be able to find it. I did a collection of sex advice, the Playboy Advisor on Love and Sex. Mm-hmm. That was the first time my name went on the column, or not on the column, but on the concept. I had been the Playboy Advisor for 10 years. I saw a copy of that on sale on Amazon for $509.
Wow.
And I'm saying, what?
What? What? You had no idea.
Like, where are my checks?
Yeah, where's my royalty?
Someone must have really liked the Chinese basket trick. I don't
know. I really have to read this book. Yes, wow, what is that?
Oh my God. You can find it much less expensive than that.
Yeah.
There are people who put things on eBay and Amazon with a ridiculous price, and someone may pay it.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
All power to them.
Okay. All right, darling. Thank you so very much.
Wait, I know you have a wonderful evening. We're probably going to have you back on again.
There's a couple of people that we need back on because it was just 1 hour was not enough.
We only have so much. Yep. We've got to.
Our engineer's eyeballing us over here.
They gave us the 5 minutes, 20 minutes
someone
ago.
Someone has to edit this down, Michael.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, sweetheart. Thank you so very much. It was such a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show.
Okay.
We can't wait to meet you in person at the big party.
Okay.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye, honey.
Bye.